Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. You join us on the back of a victory. Yes, a victory against Nottingham Forest, a team that had been unbeaten in their last eight home league games, a run that coincidentally started when we last visited them. But before we get into that, let's see who we've got on the show today. I am joined by the one and only Sony. Sony, my friend, how are you?
It's good. It's good to be here. I've had a really long weekend and now we're just here to talk football. It's my day off, so I'm very excited to just chill.
Good skills. And it's actually just me and Sony tonight. So you lucky listeners get to listen to me and Sony talk about the game at the weekend. Unfortunately, illness has spread amongst the AO crew, so it's just the two of us. But that's okay. You could even write a song about that, just the two of us.
Sounds just like the two of us.
Oh, there you go. what a melody it's already got. So, Sony, I suppose the best place to start here is just the sheer amount of injuries we've had. Because before the game, I think a lot of fans, including myself, were scratching our head, wondering what sort of team we were going to put out against Nottingham Forest. Let's just run down through the players that were injured before a ball was even kicked on Saturday. Webster picked up an injury during training. Then Igor was injured, Purvis Estupiñan injured, and Ciso injured, March injured, Welbeck injured, Milner injured, and Mitoma injured. Add in a suspension for Mo Dahoud. And it was quite amazing, Sony, that we could field a competitive 11. Were you worried before a ball was even kicked that it might be quite a difficult game for us to manage with just how many minutes the players have been playing lately?
Yeah, like I've said before in the group chats and just overall in general, it's volcano time, okay? It's volcano time. The fact that we're still able to field a team of players shows that we worked on depth this offseason, which was extremely important because, say, for example, we take the team from last year, right? We apply that to this year. We kept the same team. We made no moves. We probably would have been toast, okay? We would have probably had to forfeit something because there's just no way we could have done it. The fact that we were able to field a team of 11 and have subs and still win is amazing. Like, you know, again, I've always mentioned this, it's volcano time. We have to start throwing people into the volcano. They need to get minutes. They need to get it together. And it's just now a trial and error type deal. We cannot afford to lose more players, so we have to play smart.
Yeah, you're certainly right. We couldn't afford to lose any more players, but more on that in just a little bit. So just to go over the starting 11 then, it was Bart Verbruggen in goal, Joel Veltman, Jean-Paul Van Hecker, Dunk, and the returning Tarek Lamptey as a back four, with Pascal Gross, Billy Gilmore in the holding midfielder roles, Dingra Lallana as well as Fatty across like a front three, with Ferguson making the striker. So generally speaking, as you say, Sony, a pretty strong team, to be fair. It was the bench that saw four academy players on it. And as you say, Sony, it's just volcano time. It's time to see what these young kids are made of, because we haven't got many other people. I know Jack Hinchelwood has started this season already. He started in the defeat against Villa, and he's sort of had some periodic game time. But for those young kids sitting on the bench, Sony, knowing that you could well see some minutes against a tough Premier League opposition, I mean, well, that must be a bit of a roller coaster of emotion for those young lads down there.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about academy players who have been with the team, they've been playing with their teammates, and then all of a sudden they get a tap from whoever that says, hey, you're playing with De Zerbi. We need you to be ready. Like, let's go. And of course, these kids, I'm sure they're like equal parts excited, equal parts nervous. And I'm pretty sure they also trained with the first team before they went out to Nottingham. And, you know, again, they know what's going on. They know the situation. And I'm sure they also want to make it to the first team. So this is their way of proving it. And, you know, like, that's what we got to do. You want to prove yourself to be useful to the first team. If you get called upon, you better perform.
Yeah, damn right. And I think, you know, we've seen that with Jack Hinshelwood. He's been on the bench quite a few times. He's had game time with the first team. And I think what we are quite lucky with is the way the system, youth system at Brighton works, is that the youth team tend to play a very similar style of football to the first team. So it is supposed to be sort of like, you know, a seamless transition. But even so, four youth players on the bench, and you can guarantee we'll see more over the coming weeks, as for reasons that we have yet to explain, but we will explain as we dive into the episode. I wish, Sony, that it wasn't the first thing we had to talk about in terms of actual game, but we can't not, because Brighton conceded a goal within 3 minutes. It was a poor piece of play in the middle. The ball was given away. We were hit on the counter-attack. Gross just wasn't quick enough to catch Gibbs-White, who he wasn't exactly a speedster. Gibbs-White puts in a cross. Veltman and Van Hek go for the same ball in the middle. Veltman, therefore, leaving a player at the back post completely unmarked. And the Forest player heads in at the back post. I mean, Sony, what a terrible way to start a game of football for Brighton.
Absolute L. I mean, nobody likes getting scored on the first 5 minutes of the game, because that kind of just sets the tone for the rest. And as soon as that third minute notification came up on my phone, because funny enough, I was at work, but I was still watching it in a sense. The moment that I just heard the ding go off on my phone and I looked at it thinking, oh my gosh, it's a Brighton goal. No, it's a Nottingham Forest goal. And I know we've talked about defense on this podcast so much, and I know it's a very widely talked about subject on Twitter, X, whatever you like to call it. We need to stop making these mistakes. We want a clean sheet. And I guess this year is just the year that we're just not going to get a clean sheet in the Premier League. That's where I'm concluding, because it's just, we shouldn't have made that mistake. That should have been marked. These are veteran players, okay, who are, you know, they're veteran players. They should know better, but they don't. And it's like, dude, help your goalie out. Help Verbruggen out, okay? Like, he can't do everything for you. And if you're not defending the man that you're supposed to defend, you will have issues like this. And then people will start questioning, like, why is so-and-so still on the team if they're doing this? It's simple little mistakes that we have to take care of. Have to. Especially because this upcoming week is a very interesting week.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on there, Sony, everything you've just said. And it's about accountability, isn't it? And taking responsibility. You know, Pascal Gross, bless him, we know he's not the quickest. But then he's not helped by the fact that Veltman completely leaves a man unmarked, and, you know, the ball goes past Verbrugge. And, you know, as you say, you can't expect Verbrugge to do everything for you. And a lot of people took to Twitter or X, you know, very early on in the game, questioning what has happened to Brighton's defence. Now, Brighton have historically been a team that doesn't concede many. Of course, with the Roberto De Zerbi style of play, high risk, high reward, you're always going to concede more. But seeing these points made on Twitter really got me thinking. And I've narrowed it down into my head, Sony, about three things. And it'll be interesting to see if you agree with me. The first and foremost is the ball retention. We are giving the ball away a lot. And there's a statistic floating around this season about how quickly we lose the ball and then concede a goal. And I think we're the team at the top of the stat table that goes between the loss of the ball, conceding. So hooray for us on that one. So the turnover of ball is a big issue. Ball retention needs to be better. The second one, I suppose it's a link to that in a way, but last season, I'm not saying we didn't give the ball away, but last season we had Moises Caicedo, a player that could win the ball back instantly. So if you did give the ball away when in possession, more likely than not, Caicedo would find a way to win that ball back. He would prevent goal-scoring opportunities before they became goal-scoring opportunities. He would screen that back four really, really well. And obviously, we don't have him anymore. But we also, therefore, don't have a central defensive midfielder who does that job. In the middle there, in our double pivot, we had Billy Gilmore and Pascal Gross, two very good technical players, but neither one of them is a ball winner. And I always think that when you play with a midfield two like that, you need to have two players that complement each other. You know, there's always harps back to this idea of under Sir Alex Ferguson in the glory days of Manchester United, you had Roy Keane and Paul Scholes. Roy Keane was the ball winner. He was the, you know, the midfield general. And Paul Scholes was the silky, skillful player who would create chances, put assists in and score the occasional goal. But at the moment, we've got two silky, skillful players, but we don't have that midfield general. We've brought in Belaba, a very untested player, in the hopes that he might be able to replicate Caicedo in coming into the first team and just hitting the ground running. But that's an exception to the rule, what we saw with Moises. So, yeah, to cut a long, waffly story short, we don't have that defensive midfielder who can prevent those opportunities. And then the final one for me is the rotation at the back, be it forced or unforced. We're seeing a lot of rotation with goalkeepers, a different back line, you know, and I accept that that's through partly through injury, suspensions and all sorts of other things that are going on. But it does mean that there is a lack of consistency. It's always very difficult to build that rapport with your fellow defenders if you're not going to play together week in, week out. So those three things are sort of, for me, the big reasons why we're struggling to keep a clean sheet this season. I don't know if you disagree with any of those, Sony, or if you agree with them. You know, what do you think Brighton need to sort of do? What is the big area here that Brighton need to sort of address?
I think you're pretty much spot on everything. I don't really have anything to kind of like, you know, take away or add on top of that, because you're pretty much spot on. Again, the goalkeeper rotation, I know that we're still kind of figuring it out, and like that we already knew was going to happen. That off the top of the bat, we already knew that was going to happen. We expected it. We're seeing results from it in a sense. Like, you know, we have our guys working like between Europa games and Premier League games, and they're doing pretty well. They've only made a few mistakes on their end, but it's mostly like the defense that we're talking about here. I think Belaba needs to be on the field at all times, especially if we're going to keep him as a Caicedo replacement, as we like to say. And I know De Zerbi says that he's not ready, that it's going to take some time. I get that. But I think with the extent of injuries that we have to get him on the field. We have to just keep throwing him on there, because Caicedo was the exception. I mean, he was brilliant. He was able to get that ball back. You know, he was everywhere, and I really appreciated that from him. But now that we don't have him, we picked up someone who is supposed to replicate that, but I don't know why he's not on the field as much. I don't know if RDZ just thinks that he's not ready, or he's just not like putting in the effort in training. Like, there could be a number of things of why we don't see him. But I think, again, volcano time. It's time to throw him in. We got to throw him in. There's just, at this point in time, we just have to throw him in.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, if you're going to throw Jack Hinchelwood in, you know, Belaba needs to be thrown in as well. I get what you're saying. And I do actually agree 100%. You almost need Belaba on the field as often as you can, because although he can't possibly be a Caicedo replacement, because Caicedo was such a unique player. But what he is everything that Gross, Gilmore, Dahoud, even Milner aren't. They aren't ball-winning midfielders. They're all very good, and they have a fantastic set of skills, and I don't want to take that away from them, but none of them are ball-winning midfielders. And I think
we need to stop. We need to stop using like the Caicedo replacement excuse. I think it now at this point, now that he's gone, like, he's not really talked about as much over at Chelsea as far as I've seen. Like, I haven't really seen any of his name or anything come up on my Twitter feed, and I have a pretty diverse field. It's time to let it go. We have to start thinking about the future. We can't just be like, oh, you know, like, we need Caicedo replacement. We need a Bricallister replacement. Yes, these people are gone. We have what we have. We need to start saying Baliba is this guy. We have to start putting our trust in him. We have to just let go of the past, look at what we have presently, and prop them up. We have to, like, the fan base really just has to, you know, rally around, you know, whether it's wins, whether it's losses, like, all that stuff. We have to rally around our players, and we have to start trusting them even more.
Well said, Sony. I like that. Yeah, we're going to have to rally around our players quite a lot, Sony, because the next talking point we're going to talk about is more injuries. I mean, we kicked off the show talking about the starting 11 and how difficult it was to sort of field a competitive 11. In the first half, we lost Ansu Fati and Tarek Lamptey. So we've lost an attacker and another defender. I mean, Sony, when does this injury hell end? I mean, I've never actually experienced anything quite like it. I've been following Brighton and football for a very long time. Whether we've just been very lucky and we've been immune to it. But this season, I mean, we've had terrible injuries. Man City have had injuries. Newcastle have been ravaged by injuries. A lot of players are being injured this year. And for us, looking at our own squad, it's getting almost, it's like Joe said in the group chat, you've got to laugh, otherwise you're just going to cry. But another two players, Sony, leaving the field injured.
We just got Lamptey back. We literally just got him back. We were all excited because Lamptey, in the position at left back, if I remember correctly, he was good. He was great. Like, we were all worried about, like, losing Estupiñán. And then we saw Lamptey play, and Lamptey was amazing. We're like, okay, cool. We have a cover. Everything should be fine. We should, you know, panic less. And then we brought him in, fresh from injury. We were all excited. Then he gets injured again, and we're like, okay, great. Now we're going to back to panicking a little bit. And then we lose Ansu Fati. And Ansu Fati, we already know his history with injuries. Like, we're basically the team that's helping him building up his confidence again. And he's been, like, slowly building up his confidence. The fact that he's injured again, and my Argentinian group chat was also telling me this. They were like, we expected this to happen. We warned you guys, because some of them do watch Barcelona games. They're like, we warned you guys, he will get injured again. It's now just a matter of how long it's going to take for him to come back up. But I don't think it sounded pretty severe. So we should have him back soon, which is great. But it's going to have to be, again, that slow build, because we don't want to hurt him even more. And when he's on the field, he does things. Like, he's already scored goals for us. He's just, you know, like, he's out there. So this isn't helping our case. Losing him and losing Lamptey is not helping your case. Now, I don't know when Estupiñán's coming back. Who knows when that's going to happen? We definitely, come January, need to take a look and see who we can pick up and go from there. And at this point, like, I understand that we usually like to let our players watch and get a good sense of, you know, the style of play. But now we just got to throw them on there. It's like, dude, you need to catch up. You have a week to go. Go, like, do your thing. So January is definitely going to be very interesting for us.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I mean, when I think it was you saying that was like, yes, Tarek Lamptey's back, when you said it in the group chat, I was really, really, really tempted to respond, but for how long? You know, but I was like, I don't want to be Mr. Negative. But let's just say this, I wasn't surprised to see him hobble off. And I know, and I have seen some people on Twitter sort of voicing what I've felt for a long time is, and that is, I'm surprised he's still here. And I think it was Mike on Twitter. He was saying about he's missed two seasons worth of football.
When you accumulate,
ooh, just threw my mic on the ground. I'm a hand talker, so I've just been doing this. The amount of football he's missed in the amount of time he's been here is quite crazy. So I'm genuinely baffled as to why he's still here. He seems like a really nice lad, you know, and when he first joined us, he was electric and exciting. But, you know, we're in desperate need of fullbacks who can play more than three games a season. Genuinely really surprised he's still here. Completely unsurprised that he's picked up another injury. Maybe I'm being too harsh, but I didn't expect him to see the game out, if I'm being brutally honest. And I would like to see him replaced sooner rather than later. We need cover at right back, and we need cover at left back. So we need a fullback who can do both, which why it was really strange for me that we let Karbovnik go. I think it was in the summer, this summer, a player who can play left back and right back. We let him go, and we, you know, continued playing Tarik Lamptey, who's perpetually injured. Our injury worries deepen, and it's just becoming more and more interesting. But it did mean we got to see João Pedro take to the field and Jack Hinshelwood, respectively. And of course, both of those players played a huge part in the victory and also had parts to play at both ends of the pitch. Let's talk about one end of the pitch where it was nice to see a goal, Sony, and that is Evan Ferguson, a player who has been a little bit out of sorts so far this season, had his own issues with injury. But, you know, I moaned about Pascal Gross's lack of pace earlier on in the show, but it was an absolutely lovely ball from Pascal Gross to Evan Ferguson, who was given the time and space to pick his spot from outside the box into the bottom right-hand corner. It reminded me favourably of one of the goals he scored against Newcastle. But Sony, fantastic way to restore parity into the game, and young Evan will be absolutely thrilled to add another goal to his tally this season.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, Fergie, I know that he's, you know, like, he's been off and on of sorts with injuries, with international duty, with just, you know, playing all this stuff. He's still young. I'm not worried about him. He's slowly hitting his stride, and RDZ expects more out of him. So, you know, this is one of those, like, confidence boosters. The fact that he got a goal in, great confidence booster. Like, Gross helping him out, also a great confidence booster. Like, he has the support. He got the goal. Yes, he had another tally. I'm happy for him. I love Evan Ferguson so much. I was worried about him when he was in international duty because, you know, injuries always happen. And that's one of the things that we couldn't afford. But most of the people that came back unscathed. Tired, yes, but unscathed. Fergie. Oh, love this guy.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal striker. And I think how he's performing now at such a young age is just, he reminds me a lot of Harry Kane. And I don't just mean in the goal scoring sense, but I just mean like he could be having quite a quiet game. And then suddenly out of nothing, he can just turn the game on its head. And that's exactly what he did in that first half against Nottingham Forest. You know, not saying the game was passing him by any means. But yeah, again, something out of nothing, and you just can't give him that time and space. And he's being linked to a move to Manchester United already. After signing his new deal, I imagine that Manchester United or any suitors would have to stump up a hell of a figure to even get Tony Bloom's a look twice. Sony, just to put you on the spot, what kind of figure do you think it would take for Tony Bloom to seriously sort of consider a move for Evan Ferguson?
Evan Ferguson is a building block, so we would have to set the price high. Caicedo, like, I understand that maybe he was a building block, but it seemed like he was already wishy-washy to begin with, so I wouldn't put him as a building block. But with Evan Ferguson, the fact that he's young, the fact that he picked Brighton, the fact that he's happy, you know, he's happy with his teammates, he's happy with the training, like, he's learning so much. He's getting the experiences that he needs. because he wanted to get onto the first team. That was the whole reason why he came to us in the first place. Otherwise, he would have been loaned out, and who knows what would have happened to him. I'm going to say ballpark 125 million pound. Yep. 125, 130 is probably my best bet.
I think it's probably around somewhere of that ilk, and I think that's if Evan Ferguson made a noise about wanting to leave. I think it would take ridiculous money for a January move. We're talking 150 plus.
Yeah, if it's a January move, we're looking at 150, 160. You're taking someone away halfway through the season to help pad your stats for the other half of the season. Like, no. Like, it's January is one of those like emergency, I need to find a player ASAP moments, not, hey, I want to pad my stats with the best and the brightest people like that I can find. Like, no, save that for the summer. And even then, hell no, we're not giving you Fergie. Like, I will fight anybody that tries to go after him. I already said that I would fight Todd Boehly, and I'll fight the Glazers. Listen, they're on the East Coast. I can find them and I will fight them. All right. So you British folks, I'm ready.
Thank you, Sonny, for protecting us. And before anyone jumps on that and goes, oh, Evan Ferguson's not worth 150 million pounds. It's not about what, Manchester United perceive him to be worth the value. It's about what Tony Bloom wants. And as we've seen with our very recent dealings with Chelsea, you pay what Tony Bloom wants or you bugger off. There's no in between. That was a nice one. Let's talk about another goal then. So let's talk about João Pedro, a man who was called upon much earlier than he probably anticipated. But it was, again, a lovely ball from Pascal Gross into the box, and Pedro heads it in. And I think, answers on a postcard, I think that was his first goal from open play in the Premier League this season. I think, please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not precious about it, but we went from being 1-0 down within 3 minutes, Sony, to being, ending the half 2-0 to the good. What a fantastic way to end the half, Sony, with João Pedro scoring from a fantastic Pascal Gross cross.
Absolutely. Once again, Pascal Gross being the guy helping supply the balls. The other guys, all they have to do is just put it in. I think that we're like goal averse or something, because I've had to scream on Twitter, hit the ball in the net. Like, it's very easy. Just kick it. It's not hard. If you put the ball in the net, you score a goal. Your team then either is coming back from an L or they're about to take the biggest W in the entire world, right? João Pedro doing what he does best, again, does not surprise me. He's always made an impact on the field, probably one of the best signings that we've done this offseason. And, he could have came on later in the game. If we hadn't had any injuries, just subbing him on. Again, instant impact. Same thing with Mitoma when he first came on. He made instant impact. That's what we need, instant impact players.
Yeah, and I think you made a really good point about, for all of the bemoaning fans, including myself, hands up, including myself, that fans have done about, not replacing Moises Caicedo or not getting in another left back. I think bringing in João Pedro was a really good move. He can play pretty much anywhere across a front four, be it a centre forward, striker, left wing, right wing. And he's been fantastic for us this season. I think he's got hopefully have a continued rise. I mean, getting chosen for Brazil, I mean, certainly that's massive. Having as a Brighton fan of 20-something years, 23? No, not that. About 23 years. I genuinely never thought I'd see a Brighton player play for Brazil. And I'm sure there are fans much older than myself, sort of bemused by the fact that we have a Brazilian international. And that's pretty mad, a Brazilian international scoring goals for Brighton. Incredible stuff.
Yeah. I mean, just having international anybody in general is great. You have Mitoma for the Japanese national team. You have João Pedro for Brazil. And Brazil is always like a really good international team. Probably not as of late, but they're still pretty good, right? Even Lewis Dunk getting called up to the England national team is like a huge win in Brighton books, honestly. That's probably like the Brighton win in books. But yeah, just having our young players that we've picked up, you know, train and they play in games and they score all these goals, and their country's teams are looking at them and saying, hey, we want them on our team, because if they're making an instant impact here, they can make an instant impact also here with us. And, you know, like, I'm sure he also played with players on that team when he was back home. So very easy gelling situation. You know, Brighton is starting to become a big team, and we need to start embracing it. We need to start telling ourselves, hey, we're big. You know, we're having all of our players do all of this cool stuff. They're getting picked for things. It's time to kind of like exude that energy.
Do you think that will help us in terms of our recruitment? So as you say, you know, you rightfully say we've got so many fantastic players getting picked for the national team. Surely that can only help us recruit, you know, better players. I mean, let's talk about the young Argentinian lad Barco from Boca. We're after him. Manchester City are apparently after him as well as a host of other teams. The fact that we've got people, as you say, like Mitoma, João Pedro, Lewis Dunk, obviously I know he's gone now, but Alexis McAllister, World Cup winner, playing for Brighton and Hove Albion. Do you think that's another pull that we now have? Hey, look, come play for us. You'll get in our first team. You'll get picked for your national team.
Absolutely. Even with McAllister, we know McAllister, he's very down to earth. He's very like soft-spoken. The guy is very chill. I'm pretty sure I read somewhere online that he was telling people like, hey, you should go to Brighton. It's not a bad team to play for. And they're doing all sorts of stuff and you'd get great. Like, we brought Buonanotte on, right? And Buonanotte, yeah, sure, he had maybe like a little bumpy start, but he's been doing pretty well when he actually gets put in the position that he's, you know, really good at playing. Soon as, again, instant impact type deal. Soon as he got on the field in the position that he plays, he does miracles, you know? That's great. But it's word of mouth. Right? It's word of mouth. It's, again, recruitment. It's all about word of mouth. It's all about, you know, the optics, like seeing other, like seeing the international players like do their thing. And the people at home take notice. They say, hey, this team is helping out our player from our country do this. Like, we're looking at Valentin Barco, aka El Boat. So, you know, El Goat, El Boat.
I'm here for that name, El Boat.
Yes, El Boat. He is, according to my Argentine friends, crack. He's crack. He's absolutely crack. He's amazing. Yeah, Manchester City's trying to go after him, but we sent scouts to go see him play. He was in the Copa Libertadores. He, you know, like, he was playing for Copa Argentina, which, you know, Boca Juniors lost to Estudiantes de La Plata. See, I start to learn team names now. So this starts to get really interesting for me. But you have all these players playing with different teams and they're getting linked to clubs, not only in England, but all over the world. Just knowing that Brighton is catching their attention, that the clubs in Argentina and in Brazil and all these other countries are saying, hey, Brighton, this team that has all of these international players are coming to see, they're sending their scouts to us. That's a huge confidence boost for them, because then that starts to entail contract money, that starts to entail loans, that is word of mouth. You start to get more fans that way, because if their favorite player ends up going to Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club, let me go ahead and say that name really fast right there. As soon as they say, hey, my player just got picked up by Brighton and Hove Albion, they're going to start following us. It's like the Mitoma effect, where Mitoma came to us and all these Japanese players started coming in. That's the same thing with the South Americans. That's the reason why I brought them onto the show for our special episode, which, by the way, if you haven't seen it, please go watch it. Those guys, I love them so much. Shout out to Valen and Tizzy Mass. They're great. They were very awesome and fun to talk to, and they have so much insight. You know, for someone their age, they're pretty mature, believe it or not. And I kind of want to do something similar to the other internationals. So I'm gonna go ahead and say this now. I'm working on a project to do something similar to the South American episode, but with Japanese fans. Because, again, big core of our base, we kind of want to see what attracted us to Brighton. And if they see Mitoma, great. But they also have football experience. They also saw him when he was playing in Japan with Kawasaki Royale or Frontale. I don't remember their name exactly. But they saw him play. You know, like at one point I had Japanese fans on my like replies saying, hey, can you vote for the mascot? Because Mitoma played on that team when he trained. And I'm like, absolutely. So I think that, yes, we're starting to become a big name. Teams start to take notice and they're welcoming us with open arms to watch them. I currently have a folder filled with links to transfers and whatnot. And yeah, majority of them are coming from like Uruguay. They're coming from Argentina, like South America. Like the possibilities are endless. It's just, we have to start thinking ourselves as a big team and realizing that, yes, your club, okay, your club that you have been seeing for like 20 something years is doing something really crazy cool. Not just Europe, but just getting the players that you need, attracting those folks to come to play for your team. Like, you guys should really feel happy about that. That is a major, major accomplishment.
Yeah, it still, you know, blows my mind somewhat. But yeah, it's really nice to hear you talk, Sonia, with such passion about, you know, our followings in other countries and the people that you've built, not bridges with, that's the wrong word, but it's obviously like extending the hand of friendship to our, you know, worldwide community. And that's just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, people like João Pedro, who are making a really good name for themselves in England and in the Premier League, are performing so well. I mean, let's talk about just how cool that man is from the spot, Sony, because I mean, we've seen it in Europe and we saw another fantastic example of it at the weekend. Now, first, Sony, we do have to talk about the decision to award the penalty. Pedro was dragged down off the ball by former Albion loanee Chris Wood. A lot of Nottingham Forest fans saying it was really soft. I myself am on the side of it was pretty soft. What did you make of the foul on João Pedro before we talk about the ice that runs through that man's veins?
Game's the game, mate. At this point, the refereeing is just so inconsistent that we're just going to take whatever calls come to us, whether they're good, whether they're bad, because no matter what we argue about, they don't care. They don't give a shit. Sorry. But they, like, it could have been soft. It could have been the right call. Either way, a call was made, and that was it. The referees don't care about what we think. They think about what they think in the pitch and whatever VAR thinks. So at the end of the day, sure, it could have been soft, but that's the decision that was made, and that's the result.
That is a very very, very balanced view, Sony, there. And, you know, Pedro, as we say, steps up to the plate, cool as you like, puts it away, sends the keeper the wrong way. Beautiful stuff. João Pedro continues his fine goal scoring form. You know, must take some real cojones to do what he does.
Absolutely. You know, he stepped up, he did what he needed to do, and he hasn't failed us so far this season. I'm happy with him taking all of our penalty kicks, you know? He loves doing them. He likes, you know, he likes the excitement. I'm going to let him do his thing.
It's just the look on his face when he steps up to take the kick. He just looks so sort of, it's almost like a mask comes over his face. He's just so calm and collected. And thank goodness we do have someone who's got that sort of ability from the penalty spot. Goodness knows, over the past, Brighton have had some pretty poor penalty takers, but I think João Pedro is solidifying himself as one of the best. From one penalty, Sony, to the next, let's talk about the penalty that almost derailed the Brighton game. Jack Hinshelwood, the young lad who came on as a sub for the injured Tarik Lamptey, had a coming together, shall we say, with a Forest player. Initially, the referee waved play on, but he was later called back to check that via VAR. Again, we can sit here and talk about whether that was harsh or not, but that is the call. So before we get into the drama that unfollows Sony, do you maintain, as you just did, that the call's the call?
All's the call. It is what it is.
I like that.
We can't do anything about it.
Yeah. The reason I say I like that is because the bit we're going to talk about next, I think the discussion has been somewhat hypocritical online, and I'm sure I'll get absolutely lambasted for it, but it is my opinion and I've yet to really be convinced otherwise. Of course, I am talking about Lewis Dunk. Lewis Dunk going over to the referee when the call has been given, and it looks like he says to the referee, "What about that foul there?" He instantaneously gets a yellow card for that, which I'm going to, you know, preface everything I'm about to say with this. I do think that yellow card was harsh. If you're just going to give a yellow card to a player that goes and goes, "Well, what about that there?" I think that's quite harsh. I've seen lots of different reports, maybe saying that Dunk was too close to the referee when he went to view the monitor, that Dunk was getting in the referee's face. I can only call what I saw. And what I saw was Dunk, you know, gesturing to the referee almost, and from my very poor skills at lip reading, saying something along the lines of, "Well, what about that there?" in reference to another foul, perhaps. Then what happens afterwards is, of course, a bit of hearsay. But what we do know is that Dunk received a straight red card for personally abusive language towards the referee and will subsequently serve a 2-game ban. Now, again, Sony, a lot of hearsay, a lot of rumour and conjecture going on along on Twitter about what was said, and apologies for the expletives. Some people seem to think that he said "bald prick." Others have claimed "bell end" as well. And apologies for the naughty words. yes. and this is where it's irked me slightly. A lot of people, and I'm not angry at this, but a lot of people, perhaps rightly, have said, "Well, hang on, what about Bruno Fernandes? He's always in the ear of the referee moaning. What about Harry Kane? When he was at Spurs, he was always moaning to the referee, always getting in his ear." And then I think it might have even been Dagan. But someone said, "Well, hang on, what about Ashley Young at the weekend for Aston Villa, shouting and screaming at the referee then when he's on a yellow card? Why aren't they getting yellow carded?" And I do feel that frustration at the double standards of the refereeing, because Lewis Dunk was the first player to be sent off for abusing a referee whilst on the pitch during an actual game since Alan Smith for Newcastle in what I believe was 2008. So, you know, a hell of a long time ago. But for me, it doesn't matter. If Lewis Dunk has indeed insulted the referee by calling him a bald prick or a bellend, he deserved a red card. There's no ifs or buts about it. It doesn't matter what Bruno Fernandes does. It doesn't matter what Harry Kane does. You can't talk to a referee like that. So I have no sympathy whatsoever for Lewis Dunk's red card. I respect that I might be in the minority of that. But for, you know, for my two cents, it doesn't matter if you like Anthony Taylor or not. You can't say that to a referee and expect to get away with it. So yeah, I think Lewis Dunk deservedly saw red there. What do you think about this, Sony? Do you think, you know, I've seen some people say that referees need to have thicker skin, seemingly implying that referees should just accept personal abuse. Other people, you know, as I say, are pointing out and saying, "Well, what about so-and-so? Or what about so-and-so?" Where do you fall on this, Sony?
Oh, this is so hard because I have just been reading a lot of what people have said. Some people are just like, "Well, that was kind of like dumb." Other people, like yourself, were like, "He kind of deserved it because you can't abuse the referees." Yeah, sure. I get that part. Now, my thing is, game's the game. It is what it is. They get called, right? If he got called a bald prick, which I would laugh at, right? Like, personally, I would just laugh it off because I don't care, right? Like, if I'm in the middle of a game and I get called a brawl prick, okay, cool. Like, we still got to go. We still got to play the game. Like, it, like, whatever. If he got called a bell end, I don't know English, like British English as well as you do. So I can't gauge whether or not bell end is like down here or up here. You know what I mean?
It's not the C word, but it's not like, you know, if I called you a daft twat, you know, that's like, that's quite like, but a bell end is like, it's pretty mid. But I suppose what I would throw back at you there, Sony, is I'm a teacher, right? If a kid called me a bell end, I'm not letting him get away with it. It's about respect, you know, and the game, it has to be played with respect. I'm also a youth coach. If one of the kids on my team said something like that to a referee, I would be fuming. You know, it's about respect. And again, I point back to hypocrisy. I advocate a lot for football following on from rugby. We can learn a lot from rugby. One of the things I've advocated for a long time, and I'm not going to change my mind now, is the way that players interact with the referee. In rugby, only the captain can talk, and it is about respect. And if you disrespect the referee, you go to the sin bin. You know, the refs don't take any messing in rugby. And I've long said that about, you know, games where we've played Manchester United and Bruno Fernandes is always moaning. I've always gone, oh, book him. He's moaning at you. Just book him. That'll stop it. I'm not going to change my mind now. You know, it's times like this where just because it goes against you, you shouldn't change your moral position or your ethical position on something. You've got to be consistent. So for me, as I say, I get that, like, he hasn't exactly dropped the C-bomb. And some people say, well, he was walking away. But again, I link it back to if as a teacher, a kid calls me a twat as they walk away from me, I'm not going to let them get away with it because it's about respect. I personally am quite confused with how many people are trying to defend Lewis Dunk.
Respect kind of goes both ways, though. Respect goes both ways. So again, like I've mentioned before, the refereeing is so inconsistent. And the fact that most of these players, up until Lewis Dunk, right? Now, I'm not saying that there is like a clear bias towards him or anything, but it's kind of weird looking because it looks like he's being made out as an example, right? To me, it looks like it's being made out as an example. Because if all these other players can get away with it, but Lewis Dunk can't, there's a problem. And respect goes both ways, whether it's refereeing, whether it's playering, whatever the case may be, respect goes both ways and consistency is key. We just need a major overhaul, end of story. That's it.
No arguments here. And I do agree with you fully, Sony. You know, respect has to go both ways. And I do genuinely think referees and officials would get more respect if they were more consistent. And as I say at the start of my little spiel, I do empathize and I do totally agree with the lack of consistency. But I myself need to be consistent in the way I approach things. I would want to see Bruno Fernandes booked, so I can't then sit and moan about Dunk being
booked. Understandable. Oh, so. and then another thing to think about too, right? If it was about Hinshelwood, as a captain, I would go to bat for my team, right? As someone who works on a tiny team, and I do a lot of inventory management, I will always go batting for my team. Am I a captain? No, I'm not at all. You know, I'm pretty much like low in the rankings, but I always go to bat for my team, whether it's my leads, whether it's the higher ranking folks above me, whoever it is, no matter what, if it's a noob, if it's someone who's been here like 15, 16 years, I will always go to bat for my team, you know? And I feel like he just kind of got caught up in the moment and was trying to defend Hinshelwood because, again, he's the captain. He needs to protect his players. And it's just a heat of a moment type deal. I'm pretty sure he didn't mean it. And it just kind of came out. But what else are we going to do about it?
You do see him go to apologize to the referee. I do wonder if that apology was because he knew what was coming and he wanted to sort of say, oh, can I mitigate this before it turns into a red card? But, you know, he's at the end of the day, Lewis Dunk is an experienced player, and you know, many fans will say he should have known better, especially in the midst of an injury crisis, which affects our defence more than any other area of the pitch. But, you know, we could sit and talk about this all day. But what we can say for definite is, one way or another, whether you agree with me or you agree with Sony or you're somewhere in the middle, which is absolutely fine, Brighton conceded a penalty and the captain was sent off. Nottingham Forest scored from the penalty, and as you'd expect, all the impetus for the rest, the remainder of the game was really with Nottingham Forest. I mean, it was a very backs-to-the-wall performance in the end, Sony, and Brighton had to be at their best defensively. They did bring on Baleba and the returning Jakub Moda after 19 months out, and what a game for him to return to, Sony. Backs to the wall, see it out, performance in the end.
Yeah. I mean, they held on. They knew what was going on and they didn't want to disappoint. And RDZ, I'm pretty sure, was telling them, like, bro, we're ahead, but we cannot make any more mistakes. And again, I'm sure De Zerbi wasn't expecting that red card to happen, similar to what happened a couple games ago with, I believe, Sheffield. I think it was Sheffield where someone got sent off to.
With Ahoud, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, yes, we should all know better. We should be conscious of, like, what the situation is. But at the same time, it's passion. It's the heat of the moment. It's one of those things where these things happen. We can't predict it. We just have to overcome adversity. We have to figure out a plan. We have to have a plan for our plan in case that plan fails, right? And the fact that the guys who were now down to 10 were just out here, like, you know, trying their best to stop any more, like, penalties, any more goals coming in, that's a group team effort that should be commended. And I would like to ask your opinion on something, Tom. The celebrations that happened after the game. There have been a couple of upset Nottingham Forest fans who didn't like the way that we celebrated. I personally don't care. You know, celebrate what you celebrate, because a win is a win, right? Especially one with a very intense game. What did you think about the celebrations? Because I was all for it, but there are some people, namely Forest fans, who were just like, I don't know.
Oh yeah, the fun police were out in force after the final whistle scenes at the weekend. And we had something similar, not last season, the season before, when we scored a last-minute equaliser against Palace, and Brighton fans were criticised for the way they behaved. But you've got to take it in context. I mean, Brighton have just been on a pretty dreary run, you know, an injury-ravaged squad, as we've mentioned throughout this podcast. They haven't won since Bournemouth, which was, I think it was 6 games in the Premier League ago, at the end of October. Well, you know, so we haven't won for quite a while. I know we haven't necessarily taken many heavy losses. I mean, I know we lost to Villa and we lost to Man City. But, you know, we haven't had like a terrible, terrible run of it. But we haven't won in quite a while. So to end the game with 10 men, to play 20 minutes with 10 men, a goal up, see out that win for the first win in 6 games or however many it was. What did you expect Brighton fans and players to do? Just sort of give a little, well done, everyone. Well done. Good job. Tally-ho. Pip-pip. I don't know if it's you know, a bitterness of sort of the loss and losing to 10 men, or if it's just fans just taking the whole damn thing too seriously. I think Brighton, given the context of the situation, we had every right to celebrate, the fans and the players. So I think the fun police need to sort of wind their neck in a little bit, realise it's football, it's a passionate game. And, you know, the players were obviously, you know, left it all out there on the pitch and got their first win in however many games. So let them celebrate. Let their fans that have travelled, you know, up to Nottingham celebrate. I don't see the issue with it myself. So, yeah, I think a lot of the Nottingham Forest fans have that I've seen being very vocal about it, you know, making a meal out of it because they're probably a bit salty that they lost. But on the flip side, I've also seen lots of Nottingham Forest fans really complimentary about the way Brighton play, about our structure and our setup as a club, and about the supporters. So it's, you know, it's, I think, you know, that for every mean, I say mean, that sounds really pathetic, doesn't it? For every mean tweet that they send, I do tend to see another one that sort of like says, actually, no, what are you doing? Brighton were great. They deserve to celebrate. So I'm sort of like, I ain't about that drama on Twitter. So that's why if I get lambasted for my views on Dunk, I'm just a bit sort of like, okay, cool. So you can at me at Exiled Seagull and you can tell me how wrong I am.
Feel free to at me at _stonium and tell me that I'm wrong too. Like, I'm okay with that. I love talking to people on Twitter. Yeah. People just don't like replying to me or whatever. So, but
I love a good chat. I quite like having a hearty discussion with someone about something. I just think sometimes on X and Twitter and what it can come across as a bit sort of, I don't know, like you're having a battle of like vileness or whatever, but it doesn't have to be like that. If anyone wants to come on and have a chat about stuff and tell me how I'm wrong, it just doesn't bother me in the slightest. I enjoy the intellectual stimulation, to be honest.
I'm always learning too. So yeah. if I've said something that doesn't match up or maybe that's not right, literally let me know so that I can actually do the homework.
Hell yeah. At us on Twitter, drop it in the comments below. Let us know how wrong we are. And then we'll block your mean tweets and stuff. No, we won't, because that's not who we are. But let's talk, Sony, about then, if you had to pick a player that stood out for you as player of the match, who would it be? I know who mine is, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I'm going to give this one... I'm going to give this one to Jakob Moder. And that's only because he came back and we saw him play. And again, one of those instant impact people, helped minimize the damage. Let's just give a round of applause to this guy for coming back in the first place. What a bro.
Definitely. I think, you know, that to be perfect, I think, you know, he's been out for a long time. So to come back in that situation, in that context of going a man down, a goal to the good, you've got to see it out. You know, that's a hell of an atmosphere to come back to. And Forest is, you know, we had a really tough time at Forest last season. And not just because of the result, but because of the atmosphere. You know, I've been to that ground a good couple of times. And, you know, the Forest fans are loud and they're proud. And Jakob Moder helped the team see that out. So that's a really lovely shout, Sody. I'm going to give my man of the match to Jean-Paul Van Hecker. I thought he was excellent. I just thought he was absolutely phenomenal. And given the fact that Lewis Dunk obviously, you know, got red carded, it could have been very easy for Jean-Paul Van Hecker to sort of lose his rag because he was getting quite cross with the referee at times. But no, he was so professional, and he is genuinely, in my opinion, a future captain.
Future captain material, 10 out of 10.
He is just excellent. And I genuinely think we are seeing a player that is better than Levi Colwill and was for us last season, in my opinion. I think Van Hecker, absolutely phenomenal player. Obviously not perfect, you know, has a mistake in his game here and there, don't get me wrong. But generally, yesterday, I thought he was excellent. Absolutely excellent. So he'd get my man.
Colwill who?
Yeah, Levi who?
Caicedo who? Who?
Yeah.
Who are these people? I don't know who you're talking about.
Who cares? Who cares about them? Let's end the episode then, Sony, by talking about the European game in the week, which is our away trip to AEK Athens. We actually don't have Van Hecker for that game, I believe. I think he's picked up too many cards in Europe, so I'm pretty sure he's not available for that game. Lewis Dunk will be available.
Yay!
The red card is for domestic games only, not European, but that also means De Hood can play in the Europa League as well. So sort of we mitigate some of the issues there. But as we said, if all things stay the same in terms of injuries, again, we're going to be finding ourselves playing, you know, two games in quick succession, Thursday and then I think it's Sunday. It's going to be a tough ask with a lot of minutes being, you know, being played by certain players. But, you know, volcano time. Do you see, Sony, a situation where Brighton can come away with that with 3 points?
100%. If we can have, like I said, depth. We have the depth now, right? Now it's time for people to step up or get out, you know? RDZ always demands perfection, always says that, you know, so-and-so has unlocked about 50 or 60% of their potential. And with injuries stacking up, now it's time to turn up the fire. You have to start playing. We need to get out of the group stages. We've come so far, right? With the loss, with the draw, and then with the two wins with Ajax, that's amazing. We are making progress. Sure, the first game or two was bumpy, but now that we have played Athens, we kind of have an idea of what to expect, and we can go tackle that problem. So volcano time and experience is going to help us out with this one.
I love that. Yeah, I can see it being a tough game. Athens and Greek football in general, is renowned for its quite intimidating atmosphere. So I think if, you know, the team found it quite daunting in Marseille, I think they will find it equally daunting in Athens. So it's all about playing the game and not the occasion. But I like the optimism, Sony. Yes, 3 points can be achieved. I would happily take a point, though, if someone said to me right now, Tom, you can have a point against Athens, but you'll also come back from Athens with no new injury problems, I'd take that point. Because I think, you know, all it takes is one more injury, especially in defence, and we're in big, big, big trouble. Fingers crossed, Igor and Webster are back. But even then, I'd be worried about shoving them straight into the 11, because, you know, we've seen with Purvis when he came back for that, or like that cameo, and then again with Tarek, if we bring them back too quickly, we could risk seeing them be out for longer. So it'd be a really interesting.
I mean, we could, but again, that's part of the high risk, high reward type deal that we're talking about, you know? Like, yeah, we're going to concede a goal, but at the same time, we're also going to score a bunch of goals. And Igor, if I recall correctly, does have European experience. So he, you know, for him to get thrown into there, it's like, okay, cool. We have to start throwing people in there. Like, I understand injuries is a thing, but we have to start throwing them in there. The players have got to be careful, you know. They have to be careful with how they play, with how they react to things as well. We have to keep our expectations manageable. Like, there's so much that goes into this game that we really have to think about, and that I'm sure our players are also thinking about too, that we cannot afford any more major mistakes. And now it's time to do the thing.
Do the thing. And I think, Sonia, that's a perfect way to end it. Before we sign off, though, there's a couple of things I'd just like to remind the viewers and listeners of at home. It is currently November, which of course means it is currently Movember. And as you can see, me and Sony are rocking our respective moustaches. I'm also rocking Boys Get Sad Too, a fantastic clothing brand that raises awareness of men's mental health. The Albion Obsessed team are raising money for Movember. So if you are able to, please consider making a small donation if you can. If not, do not worry. But if you wouldn't mind dropping us a retweet on the old Twitter just to raise awareness, that would also be absolutely fantastic. And the last thing I'll mention here is about One Klopp Shop, the one-stop place to get all of your vintage football shirt requirements. So if you go on One Klopp Shop and you want to buy something, you can drop in the code ALBIONOBSESSED, all uppercase. You can drop that code in and you can get 10% off. That's ALBIONOBSESSED 10 at One Shop. One Klopp Shop, there we go. Bit of a tongue twister there, but there you have it. And all that remains to be said is thank you very much for joining myself and Sony. And thank you, Sony, for joining this wonderful duo today. Just the two of us. We got it done. We smashed it. Very professional.
We got it done. And I had a lot of fun, you know, like this. This is great. Having two people on a podcast sometimes is just what the doctor ordered.
Who needs that smelly man? No, I'm not going to say, I'm not going to call Joe smelly. That would be very rude. Joe, feel free to cut him out. But no, if you would like to let us know in your thoughts in the comments down below, what do you make of the injury crisis? What do you make of Brighton's conceding? What do you put it down to? What do you make of Lewis Dunk's red card? Do you think I'm just being a big old fool and I should support Lewis Dunk no matter what he says? Let us know. Wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves.